We're in the money. We've got a lot of what it takes to get along. We're in the money. The skies are sunny. Old man depression, you are through. You done us wrong.
For the better part of 3 years, investing in mining companies has been an exercise in extraordinary patience. A significant portion of the poor performance is attributable to the slowdown in emerging markets. Economic weakness from China to Brazil to India has contributed to plummeting commodity prices and fresh three-year lows for industrial metals. PowerShare's DB Base Metals, ticker symbol DBB, which tracks aluminum, zinc, and copper, is down roughly 37% in that time frame. Shares of metals miners have also suffered alongside commodity angst. Market Vector's Gold Miners, GDX, has been particularly battered, experiencing price erosion of 65% between May of 2011 and the end of 2013. The broader Spider Metals and Mining, ticker symbol XME, depreciated 40% in value over that same time period. However, something unexpected may be transpiring. For example, since hitting the post-taper tantrum lows in late June, the Spider S&P 500 Trust, SPY, has gained about 17%, while XME, the Metals and Mining Fund, rallied a more robust 27%. And remarkably, GDX has pole vaulted 30% this year alone. An equally intriguing change in sentiment on resources-rich country ETFs may be developing in 2014. Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, Indonesia, countries where a large percentage of global mining operations occurs, are bouncing back. The iShares MSCI Australia Fund, EWA, had a difficult time just getting about 2% in 2013, but EWA has already garnered a bit more than 2% this year. Indonesia experienced a bearish 23% decline last year, though the country may be able to credit a link to basic materials and natural resources for the renewed interest in the first 10 weeks of 2014. Credit the monstrous drop in currencies where miners operate. When the Australian dollar or the South African rand or the Indonesia rupiah loses 10 to 20% of value against a basket of other world currencies, the instinct to cut unhedged stock losses in those country ETFs is very strong. Nevertheless, valuations of miners and basic materials companies became more attractive as currency depreciation helped augment profitability. In 2014, you have iShares MSCI New Zealand up 12%, iShares MSCI Indonesia up 15.8%, and again, iShares MSCI Australia up about 2.2%. All this is in the same time frame that the S&P 500 is flat. Now, mining companies may be a whole lot shrewder than some people think. In essence, when commodity prices tank, they often halt projects and cut spending. Shortly thereafter, if currency declines are steep enough, they're able to lower the costs associated with local wages and other expenses as they move forward on projects. In fact, the Wall Street Journal recently noted that several prominent names in the mining world, from Rio Tinto to BHP Billiton to Anglo American, they reaped their biggest rewards from foreign exchange gains in over a decade. Now, granted, the operational benefits of currency declines is not something that materials-oriented companies can take to the bank. What's more, further deterioration of global economic conditions might push commodity prices in a negatively reinforcing downward spiral, much the same way that industrial metals have been unable to get up off the mat. Then again, the recent surge in everything from natural gas to potash to precious metals may benefit the basic materials resources segment going forward. Since the first week of January, I've had a number of moderate growth clients in iShares MSCI New Zealand, ticker symbol ENZL. The selection decision primarily came down to attractive fundamentals, the country's projected gross domestic product of 3.4% for 2014, and the promise of a yen-dollar carry trade where people go long on the New Zealand dollar. Still, New Zealand figures prominently in basic materials in much the same way that Australia might. In fact, New Zealand is the highest weighted country in the Wisdom Tree Commodity Country Equity Fund. Many attribute the commodity price declines over the last 3 years to weakness in global economies like China, Brazil, and Russia. And it is true that slowdowns in emerging market economies have had an adverse effect on industrial metal prices. Still, Americans may be foolish in ignoring economic warning signs on the home front. Mortgage applications and home sales have been declining precipitously. Services sector growth in the U.S. tumbled to a four-year low in February, and commentators routinely marginalize below-trend employment gains by tethering job vulnerabilities to the cold weather. But now that global miners are making a run, and in particular global gold miners, what does this say about market risks? Is the bear for precious metals ETFs and precious metal miner ETFs over? In all likelihood, uncertainty about U.S. manufacturing, concerns about the well-being of the U.S. consumer, as well as wariness of Federal Reserve monetary policy, also affect the price movement of gold as well as gold-oriented companies. Remember the numerous calls for the yellow metal to fall below $1,000 per ounce? Now the spot price is close to $1,372. And over the previous 3 months, Spider Gold Trust, as well as Market Vector's gold miners, GLD and GDX respectively, well, they're both beating the pants off the S&P 500. Over the last 3 months, Market Vector's junior gold miners, GDXJ, up 45%. Market Vector's gold miners, GDX, up 30%. PowerShares Global Gold and Precious Metals up 23.4%. The S&P 500 over 3 months, about 3%. Is it possible that gold has recaptured the imagination of safety seekers? The spot price has moved higher in conjunction with decreasing bond yields, yields that are down 35 basis points on the 10-year since the year began. Is it conceivable that the exuberance for U.S. stocks is inspiring those who wish to hedge against that exuberance? After all, we have not seen stock margin debt this high since July of 2007, nor have we seen three-quarters of the IPOs coming to market from unprofitable entities since the year 2000. We should recall that in the previous decade, 2000 to 2009, both Spider Gold Trust GLD and Vanguard Emerging Markets VWO contributed handsomely to portfolio growth. In complete contrast, U.S. stocks via Spider S&P 500 SPY annualized at negative 0.9% for an entire lost decade. Over the last 2.5 years, the tables have turned. Exposure to GLD and or VWO has dragged on any portfolio that has relied on them. I'm not ready to buy broad-based emerging markets on what many say are attractive fundamentals. The technical picture is ugly. The Federal Reserve's policies have shaken faith in many of the emerging market currencies. Geopolitical tensions are rising and economic expansion is slowing. On the other hand, ETFs tracking gold and gold-oriented miners offer an appealing technical picture, a contrary to popular opinion asset class, and a desirable possibility for hedging against global turmoil. I will say that the spot price for gold would need to move at least another 5 to 6% to establish a new bull market off the current bear bottom. Nevertheless, if the renewed excitement in the gold mining space is any indication, a 2.5-year bear for the most popular precious metal may be in its final stages. Of course, when gold is doing well, and when bonds are doing well, all things being relative, you may see a more volatile stock market that is prone to a 200-point-plus sell-off on the Dow like the one that we witnessed on Thursday. Perhaps ironically, one of the more noticeable trends in the current U.S. stock bull has been the flip-flopping of bears. Rubini, Rosenberg, Parker, Whitney, Russell, Hendry, prominent voices who received accolades for extreme pessimism and bearishness, ignored the price gains that piled up in 2009, 2010, 2011, 2012, and even 2013. These were the folks who insisted that the moves higher could not last. Eventually, each one of them relented, most of them in 2013, changed course by professing bullish optimism on U.S. stocks. Many a bear market expert had been applauded as a hero for having predicted the financial collapse in 2008. By the same token, none of these people predicted the enormous impact that the Federal Reserve's unconventional easing policies would have on corporate profits, debt refinancing, and ever-rising stock market prices. But before we fall in love with the permanent bull, they too, permabulls, have been equally suspect. Ken Fisher, Jim Cramer, members of the Federal Reserve, none of them seemed to predict the 2008 credit crisis that caused a 57% decline in the S&P 500. Other folks, Harry Dent, Henry Blodgett, Ralph Acampora, not only missed the 2000-2002 dot-com blow-up, they all came up with excuses why the bubble wasn't a bubble in what they described as a transformative new economy. The lesson learned here is straightforward. There is simply no benefit to an investor for blindly following absolute bullishness nor absolute bearishness. If you fail to minimize monstrous downside slides, the financial and emotional periods over time can be devastating. The NASDAQ has not even recovered its highs from 14 years ago, yet the media keeps talking about 14-year highs. By the same token, if you wait to participate in market-based gains based on rational or irrational reasons, you're likely to spend years wondering what went wrong as you sat on the sidelines. Investing successfully requires insurance. Stop limit orders, trend line crosses, put options, inversely correlated hedges. There are tools to help one reduce the pain in bad times and ensure the preservation of capital and the protection of substantial price gains. What's more, you don't have to predict the future to decide that you should pay a small premium to protect against experiencing really large losses. In fact, you don't even need to use a sophisticated method for ensuring long-term results. Now, if you're not sure how to reduce risk with stops or trend lines, you can visit my website, mypacificpark.com. Again, mypacificpark.com. You can pick up the special report in a PDF file there. For now, though, you should at least familiarize yourself with some simple chart patterns that can help you in times of increased volatility and uncertainty, even if it means taking a small loss. For example, Vanguard Emerging Market, VWO, not that long ago fell back below a 200-day moving average. So right now, I would not have exposure to emerging markets when a major asset class like that falls below and stays below a long-term trend line. Similarly, gold recently climbed above and remains above a 200-day moving average. So I would consider a small allocation to precious metals, perhaps using Spider S&P Gold Trust GLD. The point here is not perfection, but rather a means by which one can avoid the psychological and financial hardships associated with losing a fortune in one or more asset classes. Consider how one might have insured against adverse price movement in Spider Gold Trust GLD. It first struggled near a 200-day moving average at the start of 2013. Using the 200-day trend line as a decision tool for selling an asset that has been declining, one could have stepped away from GLD for roughly a year at the 160 price point. A year later, as GLD now crosses back above a 200-day near a 125 price point, you've actually been buying back lower, and you also avoided the tension and stress associated with a huge drop from 160 down to 115 at the end of 2013. Again, trend-based decisions are not flawless, and there are lots of little ins and outs and preferences and different holding periods for what constitutes a trend breach. That said, trend lines can be helpful in making unemotional decisions on when to remove some risk from the table and also when you may want to add some more risk or add a particular asset class back to your portfolio.
Are you terrified that an economic disaster is near? Are you scared to death that you won't be able to protect your investments? And what about when investments inevitably go back up? Well, you know what to do? You've been following me since the 90s. Let me show you how I have protected my clients' assets in the bad times and how I can help you grow your investments in the better times. I will manage your investments the way that I manage my own investments, with my time-tested, smart, and balanced approach. Give me a call at 888-500-GARY. That's 888-500-4279. As always, you can follow me on Twitter at ETFExpert or read my daily commentary at www.etfexpert.com.